in the early 90s, as well as the work you're doing today and continue to do to help, you know, enhance public access to what should be public information. So folks can certainly learn more.
Well, hello, everybody out there in Radio Land. Oh, this is Alice Brock, by the way, the real Alice from Alice's Restaurant. You're listening to me on WGX 90.7 FM on your dial in Accra. And I just want to tell you that I think community radio is the best thing in the world. You're loving every minute of it.
You can go there with your family, and you can meet new friends in the library. At the library, you can read lots of books, and you can find any book. There are lots of Dog Man books, which are my favorite books of all. When I go to the library, I read them, and that's why I like the library.
I'm also on a radio show at the library, and there was also a video making workshop that I did, and I did some animation. And I made a lot of new friends, and I laughed a lot, and it was really fun. My main reason of coming here is because it's books, of course, the library. And I really like the wide selection of books, and they have computers and all sorts of stuff. They also recently did a mural painting thing where they painted the computer room in the back, and I got to be a part of that, and it was really fun. It looks really cool now, and I just appreciate the library for being here. And if I had to choose between this library and any other one to go to, I would choose this one. I really like the Hudson Area Library, and I hope that it stays running for as long as I live or maybe even longer, because I know a bunch of people that love to read.
You like music?
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues right here on WGXC. The show is a monthly round of offerings from the worlds of psych, indie, jangle pop, experimental music, and folk, bolstered with enough classic fodder to make them stick.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
Tune into Crawl Out from the Fallout every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
How can you say no to that?
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter to WGXC.org/donate. And establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Justin Grulshan in Sri Lanka. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about creative community. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Walt Simon reports for Columbia Green Media. The Greene County Mental Health Center is the latest local organization experiencing staffing issues. Greene County Mental Health Center Director Jason Friedenberg told the Greene County Legislature's Health Services Committee on December 6th that, and I quote, "We were short-staffed for a while. We enjoyed several months of actually being full-staffed for a few months. Was really nice, but we are once again short-staffed," end quote. Friedenberg said that 10 people are currently waiting to be assigned to a doctor at the center, and 50 adults and 13 children need their first intake appointment. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said they are working ways to lure more help here. Groden said, and I quote, "One of the items on the table is the elevation of the grade levels for these licensed clerical positions to move up a step and try to get more people, because it's not like we're getting bad applicants. We're getting no applicants." Quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that the Dutchess County Legislature voted themselves large raises, adopting the $601 million 2024 county budget by a vote of 15-9 on December 7th. Members of the Conservative Party objected to the 68% pay raises put forth by Republican days after the election at the farthest point from the next election. County Executive-elect Sue Serino, a Republican, claims she's against the pay hikes but won't take office in time to veto the bill that includes the large pay raises passed by her Republicans. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media that Hudson's Public Square is getting $500,000 for renovations from the New York State Office of Parks and Historic Preservation. Representative Mark Molinaro made the announcement at his Leeds office, saying, and I quote, "The public square is a beacon for the Hudson community, but unfortunately has been in a state of disrepair for decades. I'm proud to help advocate for repairs so this park can reach its full potential and be fully enjoyed by residents and families in Hudson," end quote. The public square is where folks in Hudson gather to start parades, protest issues, and shop at farmers' market. The funds will be used to repair the park's cracked foundation, sidewalks, and benches, and improve the lighting. Dorothy Hill, who chairs Friends of Public Square, said, and I quote, "Friends of Public Square is grateful to Representative Molinaro for supporting the grant from New York Parks. The grant will serve as a springboard for a comprehensive restoration of the public square, which will include a new one in addition to the basic improvements it covers," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.com. Local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 update. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Thorpe Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend. And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a mostly cloudy Saturday with a high near 46 degrees and a south wind at 6 to 8 miles per hour. Tonight there will be a slight chance of rain and snow after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 36 degrees and a south wind at 7 miles per hour. On Sunday, there will be rain with a temperature high near 52 degrees and a south wind at 10 to 14 miles an hour. And on Sunday night, there will be showers and the rain could be heavy at times. With a temperature low of around 35 degrees, it will be breezy. And on Monday, there will be a chance of rain and snow before 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 36 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their involvement helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia County. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a 3-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many 3-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-712-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number call in and record a 3-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry. Call us at 551-299-2456. Check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio and artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose waves.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara Radio Theater Show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early night just after midnight.
This is Barbara with the Missing and Probably Dead podcast, the show that investigates mysterious missing person cases of people who are more than likely just dead somewhere. And this episode brings us to Niagara Falls, New York, for a story so fake that it has to be true.
You know, I don't sit around worrying about where I've been or where I'm going. I don't worry about the past. I just worry about the present, you know, presence. How can you celebrate without presence? That's what I say. I don't even worry at all, ever. I'm done with that. You know, I've seen it all. There's nothing to worry about, you know? It's like that song, that really beautiful song, Don't Worry, Be Happy, that the fish sings. It's a good song with good life lessons right there. You know, when I die, I want to be dancing. I want to be singing. I want to be happy. Only thing that I care about. Cobain said, come as you are. The choice is yours. Get it? Kurt Cobain, one of the Forever 27. Cobain, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, and of course Ronald C. McKiernan, a.k.a. Pigpen. They weren't, you know, they weren't happy on Earth because of their vice. But in death, in crossing over, they found happiness. And they can live a clean life on the other side. Playing together, jamming together, no longer guarded by these malignant vices, their desires, temptations of drugs or alcohol or homosexual thoughts, all the things that were beckoning them to be freaky, they're not. They're not freaky now. To enter your new life, you have to leave your old life behind. That's just like one of the tenets of the ultimate happiness. And if it's worth it, then leave that life behind, because it leads to meaning. It leaves meaning in the end, dip behind, and then it leaves meaning, the dip behind, if it leaves meaning, that crumbs, cramps behind. And all I want to do is be alone with my thoughts, because someday I would like to know, I would like to get older and jam with those kind of heavies. And you know, when I'm married with my dad's approval, I will make love.
That's the voice of Little Psychic Jim. Earlier this year, Little Jim, along with 200 other psychics, vanished in the mountains of Niagara Falls while on a psychic retreat. He was led by a controversial religious sect called Isidorians, known locally as the Sunflower Cult, from water on the coast of the Niagara River. There was a moderate search for the missing party. Two dogs were sent in, but after 23 hours, the search was called off, as officials stated that it was no use, they were probably all dead. The mountains of Niagara Falls are treacherous, mostly because they are made up entirely of garbage. Many have gone missing from massive old landfills before. There are trash holes that open up in the earth, spontaneous explosions, and wild animals. But to everyone's surprise, every single participant in the retreat, except for the 12 retreat leaders, recently returned home, safe and surprisingly gleeful, acting as if nothing happened. Linda LaHoyt was one of those who returned. Her husband, Ronnie LaHoyt, who runs a local kites and flags shop, says he was shocked as he walked through the front door, but was further perplexed when she crossed into the kitchen, quickly devoured a bowl of cereal, and hurried off to Bingo, giving him a kiss on the cheek on her way out.
Oh, yeah, man, it was weird. I mean, it made sense at first that she'd be happy to be home, but something's up, man. She's just been in a good mood all the time. Doesn't mention having been gone or anything. She's not herself. She used to hate everything, and a real crab. But now she loves everything. I even cooked her food that I know she hates, like shredded potatoes. And she devoured it, man. Said yummy. I asked her to work shifts for me at the shop, too, which she used to hate doing. But now she's all into it. We're the only kites and flags where all of our flags can be used as kites, and all of our kites can be used as flags. And check this out, alright? Now that's a recording I took a couple of years ago of Ron breathing while she slept, alright? And now here's a new recording of Rhonda breathing that I took a few years ago. Totally different, right? I always wish she'd be a little bit more cheerful in life. Now I miss her old, you know, what do you call it, misanthropical self. If you're happy all the time, you're just not paying enough attention, man.
Ronnie isn't alone in being concerned about their returned love. Little Psychic Jim's father, Big Psychic Jim, has also noticed an alarming uptick in positive vibes. When Little Psychic Jim went missing, Big Jim tried to rely on his powers of intuition to find him. When that didn't work, he joined up with other psychics in the area. They all put their heads together, then put their hands on each other's shoulders, and shuffled in a counterclockwise motion, chanting ancient vision spells in order to unlock collective clairvoyance. But this didn't work either. It seems like they were being blocked by dark forces. That's when it all felt hopeless. There was a knock on the door. Like Ronnie's Rhonda, Jim's Jim, home, full of life, laughter, and love, acting as if nothing was out of the ordinary. I asked Jim if he was happy that his son was alive.
Yeah. Of course, I'd rather have my son back home alive rather than missing and probably dead. Something happened out there, and I'm not sure I got all of my son back, to be honest. Something's still missing. My son was a kid, not gonna lie. Always getting in trouble. He was a snort and a face. Now everything's candy corn and bubbles with him, even taking up the ukulele. It seems to be the same with everyone who came out of those mountains. Everyone's just too well-behaved. Everyone's just too damn nice. What the happened out there? Honestly, I'd just love to hear my boy swear again. Be a once in a while.
All right, I gotta confess. So, like, she's got a bunch of these, you know, porcelain puppies. You know, they're like Beanie Babies, but they're porcelain and they're ponies. And I just want to see if I can make her mad, man. So I like, fixed them and stomped on them and jumped on them, broke them all. And she was just like, oh, that's all right. I was like, man, sucks.
Sid Barrett, Keith Moon, Andy Gibbs, the effeminate Shannon Hoon. You wouldn't believe it, but I've met these people, and I had good, clean fun with them. And I know they are happy and have no freaky demons left to slay. I know what you think. These people, so how can it be true? How can this be true? What is the truth? Well, the world is a lot weirder and more complex than you can fit in a podcast. There is a lot to see beyond those hills. I've heard the jam tape. You know what? 1968. And somehow, I'm playing in the band. The flesh is what a man eats, but what a man gives. There is sunshine even in the darkest hours. Okay? Oh, that would be like a great song, wouldn't it? Like something like, don't let go, don't you know? The sun inside can shine in the darkest hours. Boo-doo-doo. The sun can shine. I'm talking your personal soul shine in the darkest hours. Something like that, you know, like I could see like a real, like ukulele and drums.
The mystery of the missing psychic seems only partially solved. Yes, they are home safe, but perhaps too safe, too happy, too content. And as for the 12 members of the Sunflower Cult who organized the hike into the mountains, they remain out there somewhere beyond where most are afraid to go, quite possibly with all the answers to the questions that remain, but more likely they are probably dead. This is Barbara, and I hope we meet again.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenkins of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting. Behavior is 1 year in prison or $10,000 fine or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, buddy. All right.
Joined by Professor David Bond, who is at Bennington College over there in Vermont. And Professor Bond, along with some students, actually attended the initial part of the COP28 Global Climate Conference taking place in the United Arab Emirates. So David, what was some of your initial reactions to spending some time at COP28?
Well, I was the students this morning. I was cynical going in, and I think I'm only more cynical having spent about a week on the ground. Five.
And for people not familiar with this, is a bit of the follow-up from the Paris Climate Accords, always trying to put more details and teeth into it. I know one of the big issues going into it was would they finally agree, Ashley, to clearly we're going to phase out the use of fossil fuels and have a target date on that. A lot of people very upset by the thousands of fossil fuel lobbies were there. And the head of the United Arab Emirates, who, basically is a sultan, is running a, fossil fuel company. How did that issue play out, or is it playing out? It's obviously still going on.
It was a bit shocking to me to see how absent the phase out of fossil fuels was in some of the top discussions. That is the kind of point. If you're going to keep to any reasonable goal for the climate crisis, we have to phase out fossil fuels, phase them out now. In several of the negotiations I was tracking, we were talking about the possibility of talking about substantive negotiations with a goal of maybe policy in the next decade. These are all so wildly out of line with the urgency of the moment that it was kind of an absurd theater. You felt like I was watching sometimes. And striking also for much of the conference this time around was actually kind of adamantly arguing in various clever ways against the phase out of fossil fuels.
A lot of people called the last COP, the last chance COP, the last chance for the world to actually have a chance of warming below 1.5 degrees. The reports that have come out that we're now actually headed probably to 3 degrees Celsius warming in the last, by the end of the century, based on the comments of the Secretary General of the United Nations. I've been referring to this as the COP where they're cutting the ribbons for the opening to the gates of hell. But one of the other issues moving into this conference was, whether or not the global north industrial polluters started in the United States was actually going to provide some level of compensation, real money, not promises, hopefully not loans, to the global south to help them pay for the loss and damages from the climate change, driven by the fossil fuel polluters. How was loss and damage playing out while you were there?
Well, the loss and damages has been, there's been a strong movement from the ground up for a loss and damage fund, often led by vulnerable countries in the global south. This is the first COP where that loss was promised to have a kind of substantial commitment that was going to be sort of, you know, starting that actual institutionalizing that loss and damage fund. What's happened, the details of that are almost laughable. We're looking at annual cost to run that, to have that fund adequate to the damages and disasters that climate change is enacting on vulnerable countries. That needs to be funded to the tune of about $400 billion a year. All of the things that came in this COP, there was a big splashy announcement about it. They were all one-time charitable donations. No permanent funding mechanism has been established. And the U.S. basically, you know, looked through the couch and found some loose change to throw into that pot. All of it is completely inadequate to the scale of need in the countries that are already being devastated by climate change through flooding, superstorms, drought, and sea level.
Now, you know, loss and damages is certainly, you know, tied to the concept of a just transition that, you know, not only should those most negatively impacted by climate change, which is, you know, usually the poor and people of color, protected, but also just transition means that everybody is lifted up together, including those, you know, presently working in the fossil fuel industry. What was the vibe around the just transition concept at the COP?
Just transition was one of the more promising concepts I was excited about coming in, both for the ways that labor has been, you know, authoring this concept and pushing forward, that the phase out of fossil fuel should be seen as an opportunity to radically rethink our economies and re-engineer them around, you know, the lines of justice, equity, and fairness for all. Exciting idea. I spent about 4 days tracking the negotiations around just transition, and it was, you know, dispirited, to say the least, by the ways a pretty large coalition had taken up just transition and bent it into the very opposite of what it was designed to do. So you had Saudi Arabia very loudly voicing a kind of a statement that the just transition was only possible through more expenditures of fossil fuels. That we had to, that you couldn't you know, imagine transitioning economies, especially from developing countries to developed nations, without fossil fuels, and that actually we needed to, if we were going to talk about justice, it needed to be through additional expenditures of fossil fuels. That was the Saudi Arabia line, and a number of other countries in various ways, the U.S. included. Just saying things that were, like, you know, dead set against it. Brazil, in this respect, was actually one of the more interesting countries. In a lot of the just transition conversations, there was a real fault between the global north and the global south. The global north was sort of insisting upon centering labor rights, equity, and protection for indigenous people in any notion of justice. A lot of the countries from the global south said all of those are sort of based within the terms of the nation state. And if we're going to talk about real justice, we have to center the inequality between nation states. And so Brazil was interesting to me, insisting that if we're going to talk transition, we have to first center the international history of capitalism, and the ways that capitalism has produced deepening inequities between the global south and the global north. And that, facing up to that, has to be the foundation for this in the just transition.
There are only about 90 seconds left, so I'm going to ask an open-ended question. I understand something like 70,000 there, so my guess is you are not too close to the actual inner negotiations, but, you know, what was it like being there, and what's your hope?
As an observer, you actually have access to the negotiation room. So I was, during just transition, I was sitting one row back from the delegates that were openly negotiating it in the room. So you're right there. My takeaway is, you know, I was talking to one of the lead actors from the Climate Action Network, and they were, you know, basically saying this COP has proven that there's no hope for substantial victories from the COP negotiations. There's also a need to fight every inch of the way out to demand accountability and to shine a bright light on the growing corruption of the process as it's taken over by the very industries that are in the climate crisis. And I was quite struck by that point.
So if COP is now worthless at this point, how do negotiations in the last 20 seconds?
The activists I was talking to, some of the folks that have been involved in COP from the beginning, were saying, if there's any hope for the radical change that we desperately need, it's going to come from outside the COP process. And they saw their task increasingly as one of not winning victories within COP, but in slowing down the corruption of COP to give time for those other social movements to begin to build momentum.
It's Professor David, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hey, man, I saw your Volkswagen thing from across the street while I was getting a rhubarb smoothie. Oh, yeah, these smoothies are great. They're loaded with important phytochemicals to combat the free radicals floating around in your body, causing you to make bad decisions, like buying that Volkswagen thing. Oh, good burn, man. You seem really cool. Yeah, I guess you could say I've been dulling the cutting edge. So I was wondering if you could tell me where the raddest swimming spots are. Me and my girlfriend Olestra burning up in this heat dome. All right, man. Yeah, me and my girlfriend Topiary, we're just gonna head over there. Oh, snap, man. What are the GPs? That's like a way of saying GPS without really saying it. Well, we could tell you the DDs would have to kill you. Oh, hilarious, Pierce Brosnan. No, seriously, we would stuff you in the trunk of our 1968 Toyota Land Cruiser, and you would probably suffocate, and then you would be unable to swim. Massive bummer. Would you have the 411 on a poorly ventilated pavilion with a band playing awkward versions of old Southern rock songs? My d***, I have just the spot for you. Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday night at 10 p.m., only on WGXC and WGXC.org.
It's got a hydrophone in the water, picking up the rain and the water moving. Sounds like kind of glass-ish. And then it's got the geophone in the gravel right by the water, picking up the low end of the waves. And then it's got a airborne microphone on the rock, just picking up the sound right here. And then it's got a contact mic right near the edge of the water, kind of underneath a rock, picking up also the vibration of the water coming in. Yeah.
So we're here on the Hudson River by the Ingalls boat launch. And we're here with artist Lisa Schoenberg doing a workshop on field recording and picking up the sounds.
Yeah, I'm picking the sound of the Hudson through the water and then the gravel through four different kinds of microphones. So we're picking up like the more sound and the cryptic hidden sounds at once at the same time. Yeah.
All right, we're going to witness as Allie has a first listen on the composition coming through all the microphones.
So I'm listening to all the microphones at once?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Like, there's things I recognize as water. And there's the rain is so much more intense than, like, we sense it. And there's all these bassy sounds, which
it could be the waves coming in on the geophone, but it also could be, well, I guess you would be able to tell if it's the waves or if it's our footsteps, because you might hear that. Yeah.
The weight of us stepping, you can hear it so intensely. And like, I feel like I can hear all the rocks.
Yeah. Ah. The water is like playing the rocks.
Yeah. Oh, it's really calm. I could listen to this for a long time. And then when you look at it, you're like, oh, it's a bunch of trashy concrete and bricks. But then when you listen to it, it's really nice. Oh.
You were explaining how the microphones color, like the medium that the sound is going through colors the sound. So if it's on a rock, our voices and our footsteps are colored by that material, same as the water or wood surfaces.
Yeah, so like, especially with the contact microphones, so the hydrophone, geophone basically, and the contact. Are picking up sound, vibratory sound, through surfaces, so the hydrophone being the water, so it's picking up the sound as it is filtered by, as it is affected by that space. And even the airborne mic is picking up the sound through a filter. The filter is the space that we're in, so it's like the acoustics of the space that near these really big trees and next to the water in this rainy environment, so there's clouds, it's all affecting the sound. And then contact mic's picking it up in that sort of environment of these like little crevices of the rock, so through those, that space in those surfaces. Yeah. Yeah, so the sound reaches whatever it's going to, the microphone or our ears, through things, whether those are air or substrate.
You can tell people it's like soothing nature sounds and then be like, psych, it's a trashy riverfront on the Hudson. Really, both. What's the difference? It's both. That's also nature sound.
So would it be less interesting if we had been doing the workshop on a not rainy day, on a sunny day?
Yeah, it's really fascinating with the rain and hearing it fall on the water.
So Allie, you mentioned that the sounds are misguiding the listener from what the truth of the trash-filled shore of the Hudson, but maybe it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. Maybe the sound is helping you to see the truth of what this is and what it was and what it might become again. Do you feel like the listening to those headphones has changed your perspective of where we're standing?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, at this point, why is this covered in bricks in Troy not nature? And we're gonna have more and more of these, I feel like, ruins that are also nature in their own. So yeah, it's kind of, at first it's surprising that it's such a soothing nature sound, and then it's like, well, of course it is. And yeah, think of the history of a riverfront like this and also the possible long future, like Lisa's interested in, the difference between like river pebbles and bricks over a long enough span of time doesn't matter. And maybe this is, yeah, maybe the sound's actually just evincing that, this is nature too. And you're like, without the visual to color it or stereotype you towards a negative opinion. Yeah, it's interesting. It did change my opinion of it, I think. Yeah. You sliding around on the gravel is like, whoa. I feel like I'm at a... It's actually like crawling. It can't even handle the intensity of you just like walking on the gravel.
You hear that?
Yes. Yeah, I feel like I'm at a sound check for like a music concert.
Berlin. So, as we're cleaning up, like, what do you want listener? What do you want listeners to take away from experiencing the world in this way?
I'd say what I want people to take away from this is like that there's so much going on around us sonically that we can't hear. And like I feel like the first step is listening to what you can hear at your ears and like taking the time to do that and having the time, that privilege to do it. And the next thing is like there's so much if you dig further that you can't hear, and by like trying to listen to that part that we can't hear with the technology that we're lucky to have here, then you can maybe consider how non-humans might experience the world, like such as the non-humans living in this water or humans living in this rubbly anthropogenic environment here. Yeah.
I felt like Earth when we heard the sound. Mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, this is how Earth is listening. Mm-hmm. So it definitely did that to me, what you described.
Oh, well, I was telling Sina earlier that, like, that idea of that it sounds like nature sounds, and that I kind of, without the visual cue of, like, human objects and human waste, like, why doesn't this qualify as a naturescape or a landscape? But yeah, it's interesting to me. I don't know. It always changes my perspective on a space when I hear your microphone pretty dramatically, even though I've experienced it before. It's kind of amazing how it's still every time you're like, holy heck, that's what this place feels like, that depth of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the project that this is part of speaks to old growth, and it's coming from the West Coast where growth has a really well-recognized image for people, meaning like forests full of really old trees. It's been around for 500 years, 1,000 years. But for this project, I'm thinking of old growth with regard to any place, no matter the amount of human presence or absence, but thinking forward growth. So like, what would this place here, looking forward, what will the old growth be? What will this be as old growth in years from now, 300 years from now? And considering that, like Ali's saying, as not just a non-human thing, but the humans being part of it, and all our nature together in this place, and it's in the middle of the city, you know, and it's everybody's to experience. So, yeah. And the microphones, I think, are getting wet. This is estuarine,
and the water's coming in. Water. Check the microphones.
This is Sina Bazila-Hickey reporting from Lisa Schonberg's field recording workshop at Avenue Boat Launch in Troy.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the red mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about. Christmas Day.
not, but
you scumbag, you mugger, chick chick, lousy fagger, tubby Christmas, you're all sod, right? God, it's our love.
The boys of the end, waiting chorus, still singing, going by, and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
And he had too many pairs, so I sat to see the people that I'm leaving, and he took the road for God knows in the morning. me down. I took the hose and horses, turned them and I drank the brown. I heard the sight of Jimmy's making money far away. So I left for heaven without warning. We walked him to the station in the rain. We kissed him as we put him on the train. And we sang them a song.
Just want to see you when you're all alone. I just want to catch you if I can. I just want to be there when the morning light explodes on your face, radiates. I can't escape. I love you till the end.
Till the end, I love you till.